All right. I'd like to start first by thanking you all for being here and first acknowledging my co-authors, Emmanuel Froissart from ETH in Zurich and Peter Vitusek from Stanford, who's my PhD advisor as well. So phosphorus cycling in intensive agriculture can be considered to be relatively inefficient, where we have a low recovery of phosphorus inputs into crops, which then leads to excess phosphorus being applied, being stored in soil, so high soil storage. Once we reach a certain phosphorus saturation capacity, this can lead to high losses through runoff, leaching, or erosion. And while this is an issue, it's also a clear motivation to increase phosphorus use efficiency in modern agriculture. And the best way to do this is to better match inputs and outputs. And one way to achieve this would be to reduce losses first. So by reducing losses, we can retain more of the inputs in the system, therefore reducing the inputs we need to add. Similarly, if we better recycle the phosphorus that's been stored through decades of excess phosphorus applications, then we can also increase phosphorus use efficiency by reducing the amounts that we input. So increasing PUE remains a challenge because most soil phosphorus is not directly plant available. So plants typically take up phosphate anions that are found free in the soil solution, but the bulk of soil phosphate exists in other forms, either bound to organic matter, calcium minerals, or aluminum and iron oxides, and these need to be converted to soil phosphate in the soil solution prior to uptake, which occurs through mineralization, dissolution, and desorption. In agriculture, we typically have very high, or not necessarily very high, but high input rates to basically increase phosphate availability in the soil solution, but also compensate for high losses through harvest, erosion, runoff, and leaching. However, we have a low fraction of these inputs that is being recovered into crops, therefore leading to a high amount of these inputs being stored in soils, again, in these pools of organic phosphorus, calcium phosphorus, and aluminum and iron phosphorus. So one of the ways in which we can increase phosphorus use efficiency would be to use cover crops. So cover crops are crops that we grow into the soil in periods that would otherwise be fallow. And these can first help by reducing losses, so reducing these erosion, runoff, leaching losses, and therefore retaining a higher fraction of the inputs in the system. Similarly, cover crops can also increase phosphorus use efficiency by increasing phosphorus cycling rates, so by taking off phosphate, and then during residue decomposition and mineralization, they can replenish soil phosphate for a subsequent crop. So these cover crop phosphorus benefits are going to vary among systems and among plants. First, they vary with the amount of phosphorus we have in a residue, so the percent P, where 0.3% phosphorus is considered to be the threshold between whether or not phosphorus is going to be released during residue decomposition or immobilized into microbial biomass. It varies also with phosphorus speciation or phosphorus quality, which then varies with plant species, maturity, and plant parts, with typically older, more mature cover crops where a significant amount of phosphorus has been allocated to the seed will be less labile and will decompose slower after during residue decomposition. And then the residue phosphorus, how much will be recovered also varies among systems, where we typically have a higher recovery when we incorporate residues in the soil, and also when we grind them, where we cut them into smaller pieces. And overall, between 5 to 30% of the subsequent crop phosphorus uptake can be derived from residues that are being incorporated into the soil. So the questions that I want to ask with this are, what are the effects of different cover crop residues on soil phosphorus dynamics in intensive agriculture, and what are their effects on a subsequent wheat crop? So to do this, I set up a greenhouse experiment where I first label soils with P33, so radioactive phosphorus. It's a tracer that we add into the soil that allows us to better trace where the phosphorus from the residues is going, and we use what we call the isotope dilution approach. Then I incorporated cover crop residues into these soils at a fixed rate among cover crop residues, so 15 milligrams of phosphorus per kilogram of soil. And then I had a six-week growth period. So P33 has a very short half-life, so in order to see the signal, we need to have short growing periods. So 6 weeks, five pots had wheat growing in them, and then you can see two examples when we harvested them, and two pots per treatment did not have any wheat growing in them. I used two soils from California, one from Davis, a silty clay loam, which is an alpha soil, pH around 7, 20 milligrams of phosphorus per kilogram of soil as Olsen P, so relatively high phosphorus availability. And a saline soil, which is a loamy sand, here it's a xeric mollisol, and a pH, a little bit higher pH and higher phosphorus availability. But in both of these soils, phosphorus is not considered to be limiting. Had 6 cover crop residue treatments. First, 2 pure cereals, so rye and oat. 2 legumes, fava bean here and vetch, and a white mustard. And finally, I had a mixture of 50% rye, 30% fava bean, and 20% vetch, because we know growers like to grow cover crops in mixtures of grass and legumes, and we wanted to see whether or not there would be a difference with the monocultures. And then I had unfertilized and fertilized control. So the fertilized control received the same amount, 15 milligrams of phosphorus per kilogram of soil, but as soluble mineral fertilizer. So if you look first at the residue quality that I added, so the phosphorus concentrations were relatively high and varied a lot among the different plants. So highest in the oat, lowest in the fava bean, about a 3-fold variation. And while these are high, compared to what I find in the field in these high phosphorus soils, they're not excessively high. They're a little bit higher, but comparable, especially the fava bean and the vetch, which are comparable to what I find in the field. And the water extractable phosphorus tracks closely the phosphorus, the total phosphorus content, and is a higher proportion in the cereals and the mustard than it is in the legumes. The carbon phosphorus ratio, again, varies about 3-fold in the inverse of the total phosphorus content. And because I added a similar or the same amount of phosphorus in all the pots, I had to add more residues in the fava bean than I did in the oats. So again, about a 3-fold variation in how much residues, how much carbon I added to these systems. And while the phosphorus varied, the nitrogen varied as well, but nearly not as much as for phosphorus. So after the 6 weeks that I grew the wheat, I sampled the soils, measured resin phosphorus, which is a proxy for plant available phosphorus, microbial phosphorus, which is a pool that turnovers relatively fast, contributes to short to midterm fertility, and an organic pool, total organic phosphorus, which could also would be something that we could think that residues would contribute to. Then I grew in the wheat, I sampled the above ground biomass and the percent phosphorus in this above ground biomass. And finally, analyzed the results with nested ANOVAs and 2 key tests to see differences among treatments. So if we look first at the effect of cover crops on the soil phosphorus dynamics. So we'll see a lot of these graphs. I'm going to walk you through the first one. On the y-axis, we have resin phosphorus as milligrams of phosphorus per kilograms of soil. On the left-hand side, we'll have the bars for the Davis soil. On the right-hand side, the bars for the Salinas soil. And the different colors represent the different treatments. So in gray, we have the control and the fertilizer. In red, we have the mustard. In green, we have the rye and the oat. The pink is the mixture, and in the blue we have the fava bean and the vetch. And what I'm presenting here are means and 95% confidence intervals, so they're not standard deviation, they're not standard errors. And this is the value for the planted pots. This little dot here is the values of the pots that didn't receive any wheat, so the unplanted pots. And to complicate things a little bit more, when it's a solid symbol, it means that the difference between the potted and the planted and the unplanted pots is statistically significant. Or if you have an open symbol, it means that the difference is not statistically significant. So if we look at Davis first for resin P, lowest in the control conditions, kind of expected, we didn't add anything. Highest in the oats, which if you recall was the cover crop with the highest phosphorus content. Lowest in of the cover crops with the mustard and the vetch, and the other ones, the fertilizer, the rye, the mixture, and the fava bean were intermediate. In the Salinas system, overall more resin P. Here again, lowest in the control conditions. This case, though, it's highest in the mustard and in the mixture, so not the same treatments that maximize resin phosphorus. Still lowest among the cover crops in the vetch, though. So if we look at microbial phosphorus, lowest in the control fertilizer, the 2 treatments that didn't receive any residues. Then oats was the lowest of the cover crops, the one that received the less amount of residues among the different systems, and highest in the fava bean and the vetch, where the fava bean is the one that received the most residues. So a good clean relation, correlation, R-square of 0.6 between how much carbon we added and how much phosphorus we found in microbial phosphorus in the Davis soil. In the Salinas soil, though, we don't see this relationship. It's still lowest with the control conditions, but this time it's highest in the fava bean and in the oat. So here we don't see this relation between how much phosphorus we find in the microbial biomass and how much residues we added to the soil. So a different responds depending on the soil that we have. In the organic peat, pretty simple in Davis. If you add cover crops, you have higher organic peat. If you don't, you don't have more organic peat, or you have lower than with the cover crops. No significant treatment effect. Whereas in the Salinas case, we got a similar situation where we have lowest in the control conditions, highest in the mustard, and the other ones are intermediate, so a lesser clear signal. So, some effects on the soil dynamics. What are the effects on the subsequent wheat? If we look first at above-ground biomass, we see no statistically significant differences in the Davis soil. We do see some trends of higher biomass with the fertilizer, the mustard, and the rye, but nothing significant. And here again, in the Salinas, we see nothing significant. This case, though, the trend is more of a lower biomass in some of the cover crop treatments. For example, the mustard, which did very good in the Davis soil, did very poorly in the Salinas soil, and the fava bean. So if we now measure how much phosphorus was taken up by the biomass of wheat, we first have to compute the phosphorus content, the percent phosphorus in the wheat tissues. I don't have the time to present this, but I can show you afterwards that it was highest when we use cover crops and we use fertilizer. But when we measured how much milligrams of phosphorus were taken up by wheat biomass per kilogram of soil, we see that it was highest in the fertilizer and comparable in the mustard, the oat, the rye, and the fava bean compared to the control, whereas the mixture and the vetch were intermediate. In the Salinas soil, we still have nothing significant. So overall, more similar treatments, but still nothing comes out significant. And the last thing I want to show you is the phosphorus transfers between the cover crop residues and the wheat using 33P as a tracer. I don't have the time to go into the details of the methods, but feel free to ask questions afterwards. On the left-hand side here, we have how much of the wheat phosphorus was derived from the cover crop residues. And on the right-hand side here is how much of the phosphorus found in the cover crop residues was recovered in the wheat. So two ways of looking at a similar question. First, for the Davis soil, we see that between 35 and 40% of wheat phosphorus was taken up, of wheat phosphorus was derived from the cover crop residues, and leading to about 12 to 22% of the residue phosphorus being found in a subsequent wheat. Lower values in the Salinas soil, 20 to 24% of wheat phosphorus being derived from the cover crop residues, as compared to 7 to 14% of cover crop residues phosphorus being found in the subsequent wheat. So if we look overall at the conclusion, what are the effects on soil phosphorus dynamics? Overall, higher resin P, microbial P, organic P with the cover crops, but no clear winner. So differences in the optimal cover crop among the different variables and among the different soils. What are the effects of cover crop residues on wheat? This was very dependent on the soil. So in the Davis soil, we see an increase in biomass and phosphorus uptake with cover crops, or with most cover crops, and overall 35 to 40% of wheat phosphorus being derived from residues. Whereas in the Salinas soil, not a lot of cover crop phosphorus benefits, no increase in biomass and phosphorus uptake, 20 to 25% of wheat phosphorus being derived from residues. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the people that help for scientific advice, lab assistance, access to equipment, the NSF for funding, and I'll be happy to take questions if there's time.
Any question for him? Can you just come to the microphone, please?
I just wanted to clarify on the resin phosphorus. Is that resin probes or resin beads, or what were you referring to when you were talking about resin phosphorus?
What I use resin strips. So basically took some soil samples, analyzed them in the lab, extract them in the lab with a resin, and then elute them in HCl. So they're not strips that you put in the soil, but they were done afterwards, after the crime.
No more question? Okay, thanks.